Welcome to the Fabric Podcast. Maybe you've noticed this, but it seems like people can be so people-y, right? That messiness of togethering can be a challenge, but it's also what makes life so rich. These weeks, we're making space for the stories of fabric folks that may do a lot of things, but hopefully will help you more deeply connect to one another, to your truest self, and to the divine. In this episode, you'll hear some thoughts from Melissa Locke, as well as stories from Karen Kratz and Maya Dallagher. Enjoy.
I am Melissa Locke, and people are so people-y. It's what we're talking about. And we are not robots. We're not static, unchanging, you know, predictable. We're not actors with, like, all the lines written out for us, right? We're people-y. We're real. And that's good. So welcome to you in all of that. Welcome to the podcasters who are listening later. We're saying yes to this peopliness that we all are, and we all have to live and work with real people. We are real people, and that comes with its joys and its craziness, right? And stories have a wonderful way of helping us know how are we together as real people among real people. How do we do this better? Because there are a lot of stories that don't help us be together well out there in the world. A lot of them are more grounded in controlling other people, right? Or manipulating other people. They're not grounded in this truth of who we are and how things are. So we're gathering around those stories that remind us of who we are and what we're a part of. At the top of your Sunday paper, you can see a quote, and it's from Anne Lamott, and it's in a foreword from a book that really inspired a lot of our storytelling wisdom during this series. And I think she says something significant about that will help ground us today. She says, if people are going to be transformed, it has to come from love. From speaking to one another about the truth of what we have lived, from speaking to one another about the truth of what we have lived. So we're going to be hearing some stories full of some truth today, and they both involve journeys. We're all on our own kinds of adventures and journeys, and I want to invite you to help be here. To help yourself be here. And this is something you can do anywhere you are. We practiced it last week. And what I want you to do is find a spot on your hand, or maybe it's on your chest or your belly, and you're just going to be drawing a circle that gets smaller and smaller, kind of like winding your way on this journey. And on the outside of the circle, there's so much going on and so many demands and expectations, and things that you aren't doing. And that's all real. There's also wonderful things on the outside. It's hard to know what to say no to sometimes, or what to let go of. And so we keep trying. We keep moving the best we can. And as you draw your spiral, circle, make it smaller, like a spiral. And when you get into that center spot, put a little weight in your finger there and take a breath. And I want you to think of that spot as home for you, and a spot you can always reach no matter what's going on the outside. It's a spot where you are you, and you don't have to think about that. You don't have to worry about what you are and what you aren't. You just are, and you are loved, and you are loving. And we know we can't always know that, but we get glimpses, and we help each other come back. So that's that spot as you're listening this morning that I want you to try to come back to listen from and to carry away with you this morning. So welcome.
So as we step off the bus with our backpacks and I watch it drive away, the realization sinks in that we are the only two people around for miles. And I start to think, I might not be ready for this, but here we are. So it was right here at Fabric that Aaron and I discovered we had both always wanted to go to Alaska. So we decide to go, and part of our trip is going to be backpacking in the backcountry of Denali National Park. My previous backpacking experience was 4 days on the Superior Hiking Trail right here in northern Minnesota. Turns out, not so similar to Alaska. But I don't know this yet, so I'm excited as we start making our plans and we gather our gear and we dehydrate our food. And I think that I'm learning a lot in these preparations, but I still have no idea that I have no idea what I'm getting into. So my inexperience leads us into some tricky situations. Like, for example, I fail to clip our can of fuel that we need to cook all that dehydrated food onto my backpack. And so it slips out of the pocket and is on the floor of that bus that drives away. Separate story, we get the can of fuel back. Or the morning where instead of scanning behind Aaron for bears, as I learned in our backcountry video, I have this weird feeling. So I keep double checking her scanning area behind me instead of watching where I'm supposed to be watching. And that allows a mama grizzly bear and her two cubs to wander within about 15 feet of where we're cooking our breakfast. So miraculously, we survive both of these situations. But what surprises me the most is this. Denali is this huge rolling tundra that is just hard to fathom with any of your senses. There's something called Alaska eyes where you think, oh, we'll just hike to that peak right over there, but nothing is just right over there. And it is a trailless system, which I had read about and I knew like intellectually as a fact, but I had no idea what that was going to feel like. So the way it works is the day before your trip, you go to the backcountry office and they assign you a unit. Denali is 6 million acres divided into 87 units. So your unit can be thousands of acres in which you are most likely the only human beings there. And so you put everything you need to survive on your back, including your can of fuel, and you get on this bus, and when you get to your designated unit, they drop you off and drive away. And the only sign of civilization is that one road that you are standing on. And you are given a topographical map that has elevation and the water features. But there are no signs around you telling you where to go. And there are no designated campsites so you know that you've arrived. And there is no trail map with the "you are here" arrow, which is my favorite thing to find on any map. And there are no paths, so we just have to take a step in what we think is the right direction, away from the safety of the road, and another one, and just keep going. Early on, I pull out my compass, and I say, "I have this. Does this help?" And Aaron says, "Do you know how to use it?" And I say, "No." And she says, "I don't either." So I put my non-magical compass away. That's not going to save us. But I find that the farther and farther we get away from the road, the more and more fearful I become. If something happens to Aaron and I'm the one that needs to get us out to safety or go for help, I have no idea how to do this. To give you a sense of my navigation skills, I once almost drove to North Dakota on my way to Madison, Wisconsin. So anytime I'm with anyone else, I assume their navigation skills are stronger than mine. So I keep anxiously asking Erin where we are until I realize she has also never been to this place, and she doesn't know where we are either. But she encourages me to orient in a different way. and to look around at the land and notice features and to give it a name so I'll remember it, to turn it into a landmark. So I start to look around in observation instead of in this wild, blind fear, and I notice things. So there's this red, rocky, scree mountain that I name Mars, and we know that Mars is to our left, and Sable Mountain, we think, is to our right. And so we keep going like this, and we stop and check our map and look around us. We make our best guess as to where we are and where we should go next. And we figure out, while there are no paths, if we walk the ridge line, which is the highest point, instead of up and down every single rolling hill, that's very helpful. And eventually we find a water source and a hillside in which to set up our tent, because there's no campsites. So now we have this like new marker of civilization, our tent, and it's hard to see, it's that little speck right there. And we can see it for miles as we hike around and we slowly turn this wild place into our home for a few days. In the morning we hike out, we get up before sunrise because we have to get back to this one road to catch the one bus and we can't miss it. And we find that we've learned a little something and we've developed a relationship with this land. And it takes us less than half the time to hike out as it did to hike in. We also know that a full-size grizzly bear can disappear behind a bush. So we are very happy when we get to the safety of the road. And had I known what I was agreeing to in hiking in this remote, trailless, grizzly-filled wilderness, I would have never agreed to it. Because I wouldn't have thought myself capable. Because I wasn't capable until I was, because we had to be to survive to tell this tale. Thank you.
Oh my gosh, I am so glad you lived and came to tell us that story. Wow. The story about maps reminds me of something that Mark Iaconelli shares in his book that I want to share. We map our world in story. The world falls apart, we map a new world again and again. We story our lives in order to situate ourselves. We are here, right? I am here, not there. I am here. And I long to go there. Once we find ourselves, new possibilities emerge. Curiosity rises within us. We feel the pull to discover new countries, to traverse new oceans. That all sounds great, but where do we start? How do we know where to go? How do we find that sense of home? And I want to suggest that what we've been experiencing is the power of a story that is true. And that is so vastly underestimated, that power. So what is a true story? If you've been around Fabric for any length of time, you know that we don't go around pretending that we know the truth with a capital T. That's much too big for any words to capture fully. And we think it's very important to try to ask the questions, to be on that search for what is true. So some of the markers I want to suggest for how we might know a true story, whether it's one that we're telling ourselves or telling others or hearing and listening to, are these. First, a story that is true right-sizes you. I think you've probably heard the quote about don't shrink and don't puff up, stand your holy ground. So a true story might humble you sometimes. It might complicate things for you. It also might affirm you and remind you that you're worthy. A true story also transforms fear. I think it transforms it into courage. A story that is true will always reveal connection. It will remind you what you're a part of, not apart from. So that mountain among all of the mountains in this huge land becomes, oh, that's Mars. I know, I've been there. I know that one, right? The ridge lines start to become apparent that you might walk. And so finally, a story that is true helps you keep walking. You might not know 10 steps ahead, but it'll help you find that next one. So it helps you keep walking. So the last thing about these stories is if we just keep them in, they don't have the power that we need. So the power of them is in the sharing. It's in when we give them voice, when we say, hey, that mountain, it looks red, let's call it Mars. Okay, yeah, let's call it Mars. The power is in the sharing.
I had a chance to throw a bachelorette party to remember, and I delivered. Kelsey, my beloved college roommate, was getting married, and she wanted to have a Boundary Waters bachelorette trip, and I was to lead and plan. Being Kelsey's roommate was awesome. Much of our fun was sparked by a whim that I had, and Kelsey just going along with it. Whim is the really strong word there. I'm not somebody who thinks things through all the time or enjoys doing research on what to do. I just take the thing that's right in front of me and run with it. Kelsey and her partner, Alex, often make fun of me for going skinny dipping when I shouldn't, using recipes as guides, bringing people I do not know well on trips with me, and just generally throwing caution to the wind. So I had permits booked for Angleworm. If you know the Boundary Waters, you know this is a 2-mile portage in. And if you don't know what portaging in it means you're carrying the canoe and all your gear on your back for 2 miles, okay? But it was Memorial Day weekend, and there were not any other options, any other permits available. Actually, there were a million other options that I could have done to make this remotely fun, but I could not give up on this idea of this magical trip that I would lead in the Boundary Waters with my best friend. So my thought was, this portage is gonna suck, but we can do it. We can do it. So let me tell you who we are. Myself, a beginner canoe guide. My sister Marita, who'd been to the Boundary Waters once before, she's sassy and she likes camping a medium amount. Kelsey's cousin Anna, who had never been to the Boundary Waters before, super strong farm girl, but wouldn't have been going to the Boundary Waters if Kelsey didn't ask her to. And then there was Kelsey and Jenna, the bride and her sister, both very trusting of their friend Maya, expecting an adventure, but not complete misery, okay? So we get to Paragus to rent our second canoe, and the outfitter is sizing us up and says, like, do you want a lighter canoe? And Kelsey remembers thinking quietly to herself, I wonder why he said that. And I, you know, pipe in with, like, no, this portage is going to suck. It's going to be hard, but we can do it. We can get through it. I really underestimated the suckage of the portage. The portage was absolutely brutal. I'm guessing we were about 20 minutes in when I finally realized how bad of an idea this was. All, like, the better, even, like, remotely fun ideas were just, like, cruising through my mind. Like, we could have done this. We could have done this. We could have done this. And also, the portage was, like, silent. Like, usually you're cheering each other on or, like, maybe talking a little bit. No. We were just, like, silently cursing somebody. Maybe me. And praying that it would end soon. And it did eventually, but oh my gosh. Marita looked at me in the eye at one point and said, "I hate you." and I am pretty sure I said, I hate me too. So we did eventually get to the lake, and of course we canoed to a site across, and it was of course already taken, so we canoed back to the portage and unceremoniously camped there. We did manage to have steak and asparagus and brownies that night, so that was good. I did pack a ton of alcohol because it's a party, you know, whatever. We were so miserable, we could not even, like, get drunk. It was just, like, it was just there, and we were going to portage it out, and it was fine. The next day was cold and rainy. We did make it to a better campsite, and the highlight of that day was two hikers wandered into our site who were somehow more unprepared than us, and we, like, got to save them by paddling them to a campsite. So that was kind of fun. The morning we leave, it is cold and rainy. And while I have known that this is a failure of a trip the entire time, Kelsey really names this as the moment when she was like, yeah, this is a really bad trip. And I did, I remember feeling so bad, like, because I was like, no, this is my fault. This is not your fault. It's my fault. Anyway, but So we take our sorry selves back down that 2-mile portage. I actually think it was this portage that Marita said she hated me. We pack up our cars and we go our separate ways. We did this absolutely ridiculous trip and we survived. We were in a crappy situation and we sat in it, cold and wet, for 2 days. And we made it through. Jenna still says, like, yeah, that was pretty messed up, but I would go again. Marita still has never been to the Boundary Waters with me since, but we do still love each other. And when I called Kelsey to tell her that I was telling this story, she immediately burst out laughing. So did I throw a fun bachelorette party? Absolutely not. Not even like any part of it was fun. But did I throw a bachelorette party to remember? Yes, definitely. Thanks.
Thanks for listening. We hope this podcast sparks conversation in other parts of your life. If you're looking for meaningful connections, there's a Fabric group for you to try, whether you're in the Twin Cities or not. Tag @FabricMPLS with your wonderings on social media and find resources on our website, fabricmpls.com.